the moment, I feel we're facing, you know, a twin crisis of polarization and loneliness. So I make the case that deep listening and engaging more profoundly with people around us, we can play a part in some way dialing down these two crises.
That's Emily Kasriel, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Emily Kasriel is an award-winning journalist, editor, and media executive who worked for over 20 years at the BBC. She developed the deep listening approach during her time as a senior visiting research fellow at King's College Policy Institute in London. Building on her expertise as an accredited executive coach and workplace mediator, she joins us to talk about deep listening. Transform your relationships with family, friends, and foes. Emily, welcome to Conversations.
Thank you so much, Dan. Delighted to be here.
Well, let's start with the title of your book. What is deep listening?
Well, the way we normally listen is kind of performative. We pantomime the act of listening. We listen long enough to get the gist of what the person's saying, and then we interrupt and tell them why they're wrong, or to cheer them up, or to solve their problem. But we're not really present, and we're not really open to whatever can unfold. And when you deeply listen, it's like the whole of you listens to the whole of them with curiosity and then empathy, having listened to yourself first.
Well, there are so many questions here and so much information in this book that we won't have time to cover it in this brief interview. So would you give us a brief overview? Let us know what listeners are going to find here.
Well, I talk about in the book the 8 steps of deep listening. Step 1 is about creating the space. And this is for really important conversations when you have a relationship to repair, when there's a big difference of power, or you feel that your relationship really needs greater connection. And so step 1 is about creating the space, finding the right place to have that important conversation, thinking about where the speaker is going to feel safe, and then even physically. Metal and glass tend to rebound sound. You know, material wood are better. Side lights are better than overhead blue-white light, makes everybody feel a bit stressed. Step 2 is about listening to yourself first. What's your skin in the game? What's your goal of the conversation? And perhaps your relationship is even more important than the win that you thought was your goal in the conversation. And what might be really at stake for the speaker, do you suppose? Listening to yourself first is so important because we bring so many shadows to a conversation and to every interaction we do. And these are parts of ourselves that we haven't really accepted and that are in our mental basement and creep up when we feel defensive. And having some awareness, even though it's a journey of a lifetime, of what's going on in you can allow you to be open to another person. And step 3 is about being present. We all know how distracted we are by our mobiles. Even if they're off with no notifications, can we put them out of sight? But it's also about taking the time, perhaps with one in-breath and one out-breath, to center ourselves so that our speaker knows that we are really there for them. And actually, the way that you're listening to me now, Dan, I have a sense of your centeredness, of your groundedness, and that makes me feel more comfortable as a speaker and makes me feel that I matter. And that's so important to convey to a speaker. Step 4 is about being curious. So often we think we already know what the speaker is going to say, so we stop listening. But the person is not the same as they were last year, last week, or even last night. So can we listen as if we are going to learn new things with curiosity? And that helps us develop an empathy for the person, even if we disagree, and then respect. And what's so critical is that listening does not signal agreement. And many people think it does, especially young people, as we found in a big survey we did across 2,000 people in the US for you with YouGov, that listening, you can listen and you cannot agree and you cannot obey. And that frees you to listen to all sorts of people in very different ways. Step five is about holding the gaze. Actually, face-to-face, not so good. Usually when we're face-to-face, we're about to kiss somebody or kill them. Doesn't make us most relaxed. 60 degrees works better. But being able to have a confidence in most situations to look someone in the eye, but a warm-hearted gaze, not a penetrating gaze to make them uncomfortable, can unlock all sorts of things. And actually, the speaker might go on a journey physically with their eyes, but knowing you're waiting for them, it will be a much richer journey when they do return. They will have thought new thoughts and can share them with you. And step six is about holding the silence, because many people too fear silence. They think it's intimidating. They think it's about extracting something in negotiation. Actually, even in negotiations, if both parties leave a couple of seconds of silence, more likely to have win-win outcomes when they both benefit rather than zero sum. If I win, you lose. And silence also allows us time to make sense of what the person has said and what they've not said. So we can go into step seven and reflecting back. And it's not the reflecting back you might have learned about in an active listening course where you go, yeah, I understand, you paraphrase. That's not authentic reflecting back with your third ear, as Theodore Reich, a psychologist termed it. It's like you're not just listening with your mind, your ears, either side of your mind. You're listening with your heart, your unconscious, to really try and capture what the speaker has said and reflect it back with humility. Because you're not just reflecting back what they've said, but also what they haven't said, but you sense is there and their feelings. And then the speaker can say, yes, or not that, but this. And in doing so, helps them understand themselves more clearly, and you can understand them too, in order to have a sense of their deeper narrative. Step eight, going deeper, their values, their motivations, their needs, and reflect that back if it feels appropriate. And having some sense of that is so critical if you are engaged in a big disagreement and you need to try and understand them, and then they are more likely to be in a situation and a position to understand you.
And the book obviously goes into detail in each of these steps and provides insights, questions, sort of little exercises that you can do to help focus on each of those steps. Tell us a little bit about how that book is organized to take us through the steps.
So before we engage with the steps, I also make the case for deep listening about how it can, looking at a lot of different evidence, both my own studies and others, because in fact, we did a big project with 1,000 people in 100 countries, and we found that people who practice deep listening were not only felt more connected, but also were able, felt safer to re-examine their own attitudes, felt more understood, and this is really critical, felt more open to re-examine their own attitudes. So when you are listened to, you're more likely to think that there's more than one perspective at play and be open to more than one perspective. So I make the case by looking at a lot of the research, how it can help you be a better leader, help you be a better parent, help you be a better colleague and be a better friend, to be able to really listen and be with a friend, for example, if they've gone through a really tough time, without trying to cheer them up, but really being able to stay with their level of discomfort so they feel heard and in themselves are then more likely to be able to move to a better place. But also when they share good news. So it's all the different ways in which listening can help, not only for individuals and the people directly around them, but also for society. Because at the moment, I feel we're facing, you know, a twin crisis of polarization and loneliness. So I make the case that deep listening and engaging more profoundly with people around us, we can play a part in some way dialing down these two crises. So I make the case for why I'm doing it. And I actually give a demonstration and I talk through what actually deep listening is in more detail. And at the end of the book, I talk about some of the dangers of deep listening, because you might find that somebody trusts you and shares things that perhaps they wouldn't normally. And you have an obligation as a deep listener to treat that information with confidence. People also might share with you some really difficult material that you don't feel you are able to bear. And then in those sorts of situations, you need to think politely and authentically to tell the person, this is a bit, you know, I'm finding I'm struggling a bit here, but perhaps let us think together of other sources of help for you. And so being aware of those dangers, I think, is super important. But that is because this is a profound activity. That's why there are risks. And we need to be thoughtful and intentional about that. But at the end of each step, I kind of sum up the key points of each step and then give people challenges so that they go and try different aspects of deep listening in the wild. And that's really exciting. And I love people to buy my book and read it. But what's even more important, that they actually practice it in order that more people can get truly heard.
I want to talk a little bit more about that ethics and danger chapters, because as you point out, if you're truly connecting with someone, they might tell you something that ethically you feel like you have to do something with. I mean, in an extreme case, maybe they confess to have committed a crime or some other thing that you feel like you can't keep this a secret, you can't keep this confidential, you need to do something about it. Or if you feel like they might harm themselves, any of those sort of situations. Tell us a bit more about what to do in that case.
I think that if you hear about somebody who has done something that you feel very uncomfortable, and I certainly encountered that because I've been a coach, an executive coach for over 10 years, and people do share all sorts of things with you. If at all possible, I think being authentic in the moment and saying to them, what you've just shared with me makes me feel, you know, pretty uncomfortable, because I sense that what you've done has transgressed a rule or a boundary or indeed a law. And I'm wondering about how, what we might do about that together. So it's about not being judgmental, about being authentic and true, and ideally working in collaboration with that individual in terms of enabling perhaps them to be open or to right that wrong and think about that. What was the other challenge that you mentioned?
Well, it's just if you thought maybe they confided in a way that made you feel that they might hurt themselves and they may need professional help.
Again, if you can have a conversation with a person and say to them, you know, with authenticity, what you have shared with me makes me feel you're quite vulnerable at the moment. And I'm wondering, perhaps we can think together about ways that you might get some support. And then if they refuse point blank, I mean, as a coach, there are certain areas, for example, where we do break confidentiality. And if a person is at risk of harm to themselves or another, is that instance. And you might choose to get more help if the person really refuses, if you feel they really are seriously vulnerable. But if you can work in conjunction with the person, it always is preferable, so that there isn't that need to break any confidence and encourage them to seek support themselves, which they're far more likely to be able to be open to if they have initiated that encounter and don't see it as imposed on them.
And as you mentioned before, you have to be aware of where you are in this conversation. And you give an example in the book where a person is talking about the stories that they hear, and sometimes they're so heart-rending that they need a break, that it becomes too much for them. So you have to watch out for yourself as well, that you don't become overwhelmed by other people's situations.
Yeah, you're completely right. And being centered and thinking through your own stuff first enables you to know how much is their stuff and how much is your stuff. And you need to keep yourself safe. So if somebody is, you know, although I'm encouraging people to listen across difference, number one, it's got to be a situation you feel safe and not a situation where you feel that that listening will be exploited as you agreeing with the other person or put on social media. We're talking about authentic encounters here. But you're quite right that people may share stuff which feels too much to bear. And then just being open with them and explaining to them that you really feel for them. You're grateful for their honesty and for sharing, but you either need a break or perhaps you, again, together can think of other people who can support them.
Also at the end of the book, you have some starter questions to give people some ideas about phrases you can use to get into a conversation or elicit responses. So tell us a little bit about those.
So especially if you're in a situation where you disagree fiercely with somebody, it can be really helpful to ask them what in your life experience has led you to believe what you do. Because in doing so, they will talk about their life experience and then they become a human being, not just an ideology, not just a label. And we can all relate to human stories. And once we hear the human story, we then ourselves are able to start dialing down our own defenses, become open and compassionate, and understand why somebody believes something that we might, for example, find abhorrent without having to necessarily agree with those perspectives, but we connect with them as a human. And I think that's really, really powerful. Sometimes, you know, asking a really open question, like, what's going on for you? You know, and it's the way that you ask it, because I think a lot of people say, hi, how are you doing? You know, that's not a real question. That framing is a performative question. You say, yeah, I'm great, because that's the only answer you can give to that type of question. So it's about when you, it's not just the words, it's also your tone and your centeredness and your body language and your intention that can be communicated to the person that you are truly curious to understand them in all their entirety.
What impressed me about this book, it's not just the sort of thing you read and set aside. It is a process, and it sounds like something you could revisit over and over as you kind of work through and incorporate this into your communication style. So tell us a little bit more about how you envision people using this book.
I think you're quite right. While some people might decide to read right through it, and it's not dry, it's full of stories, not just about other interesting people like President Mandela, who I witnessed listening, and people who are hostage negotiations. There's also stories of myself when I failed to listen when I interviewed the president of Ethiopia, or how a doctor listened to me when I pretended to have concussion age 9 and was able to unlock me from my lie into being real and being open and honest. So I think that I hope that it's a compelling read and people feel inspired by the stories, but I would like them to take it slowly, ideally, so that they can practice this. They can have a go because, for example, people always tell me that the silences, leaving silences is super awkward at the beginning. But then after I get back in touch with them, and we've done this on large surveys, they say that leaving a few seconds of silence after someone has spoken has made the most transformational difference to their lives. And so I'd love people to take it slowly, to take the challenges and to try them out, first of all, in very safe, comforting situations, and then in little more challenging situations, and reflect back on what's working, but not in a harsh, judgmental way, but in a compassionate, kind way to themselves, so that they can undertake this listening as a journey of a lifetime.
Well, we've covered a lot in this brief interview, and there's much more in the book. What would you say are the key concepts that you hope people are going to take away from the book?
The importance of being curious, truly curious, and the richness of relationships that can emerge when you truly listen, and the flourishing you can have in your own soul when you connect deeply with another person and understand their perspective. It's mind-blowing. You feel alive. And I hope people feel inspired to have these kinds of conversations, knowing how transformative they can be.
To learn more, the book is Deep Listening: Transform Your Relationships with Family, Friends, and Foes by Emily Kasriel. Emily, thank you for talking with me today.
Thank you so much, Dan. It's been fantastic to have this conversation with you and with your audiences.
You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen to the latest episodes on your phone or tablet, and you'll also find us on Facebook. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.